Welcome back to The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. It's a safe bet to say that there's no children's author more beloved than Dr. Seuss. He wrote the classics that were silly, yet somehow profound. Even now, as grown-ups, we remember those precious lines. And although Dr. Seuss has been gone since 1991, there's a new book of his that is now out, What Pet Should I Get? And we're going to talk about the influence of Dr. Seuss on our reading life and other great children's literature and authors. And we want you to call in with your memories and suggestions about Dr. Seuss and other great children's books. The number is 210-614-8980, 614-8980. You can also email your questions and comments to the source at tpr.org. We're joined this half hour by Vicki Ash, the Children's Book Coordinator for the San Antonio Public Library. Vicki, welcome to the source.
Thank you so much.
And Claudia Maceo, the manager at the Twig Bookstore. Claudia, hi.
Hi there.
And Bergen Streetman, she is the from the Trinity University Press, and she also writes a blog, Vintage Kids Books My Kid Loves. And Bergen, hi.
Hi, David.
Welcome to the source, all of y'all. So is this how big of a deal is it, Claudia, that Dr. Seuss has a new book out?
It's such a big deal that we are out of them at the Twig Bookshop and have many on order that are supposed to be released this week again. So it's a big deal.
A big deal. How did this happen, Vicki, that Dr. Seuss has a book out?
Well, his widow and his longtime secretary actually found this book in a box, I guess in a closet somewhere, as they were going through his things. And it really was not a complete manuscript. It was really in progress. And so the publishing company sort of did their best to determine what his intent really was. The illustrations were not complete, and there was lots of variations on what the text might be. So there was some editorial work done, and certainly we're happy to have it. It brings a lot of attention to his older work as well as excitement about this new book.
And so, Bergen, how does this fit in the canon of Dr. Seuss? Was this early work, late work, they didn't finish?
I'm not even particularly sure what the year on it is, but I think it's sort of similar. The same characters that are in One Fish, Two Fish, Red Fish, Blue Fish are in it. And a lot of people think maybe he had both of those books and that book actually ended up being the stronger book, kind of about the same characters, so that maybe that's why he put it aside. No one really knows. It's kind of a mystery.
So let me ask you, Vicki, who is Dr. Seuss, really?
Well, his real name is Theodore Geisel, and he was born in, I think, 1904, on March the 2nd, which has now become Read Across America Day in honor of his birthday, and children all over the world, all over the country have read-alouds in his honor that day. It's part of the National Education Agency's effort to get kids excited about reading. And certainly, he made, I think, a contribution in two different ways. One, he has a lot of picture storybooks, McGilligut's Pool, which I read was your son's favorite. But then he has this whole set of beginning readers, which he was really part of the, I guess we could say, the creation of that as an idea about children's books. There was considerable thinking that Dick and Jane just wasn't going to cut it on the long haul, that they weren't really that interesting to children. And he, along with Bennett Cerf, who was an editor at Random House, created this beginning book idea, where there was much more interesting, much more lively, more than See Spot Run, Run Spot Run.
Was it controversial at the time?
Well, one of the things I read in preparing to talk with you today was that he was actually under contract with Random House, but it was people from Houghton Mifflin who had this idea that maybe we could write something better, and that they negotiated that Houghton Mifflin would have the educational publication, so they'd sell it to schools, but Random House would sell it to the general public, and schools didn't buy it, but the general public did. So I think, and that was his first beginning reader, The Cat in the Hat. So I think there's certainly reason to believe that sometimes parents have a good idea about what their children are going to respond to.
Right. Is that true, Claudia?
Yes. And when I think back on the books like Dick and Jane, it was all controlled vocabulary. And that was the emphasis, was this, you know, see Dick run. And then he came along and made language playful again. It made it fun. It just added a pizzazz to learning to read that was so missing from those early books that I remember.
Well, what about, let's listen to a clip here from a book the Butter Battle book, and this is has more. It was more than just whimsical wordplay. There was something more going on there.
I marched to the wall with my triple sling jigger. I marched to the wall with great vim and great vigor. Right up to Van Itch with my hand on the trigger. I'll have no more nonsense, I said with a frown. From zooks who eat bread with the butter side down. Van Itch looked quite sickly. He ran off quite quickly. I'm unhappy to say he came back the next day.
Shoot if you must with your triple sling jigger. But I also now have my hand on a trigger. My defensive weapon, the Jigger Rock Snatch'em. We'll fling 'em right back just as fast as we catch 'em. We'll take no more nonsense. We'll take no more gup from you yooks who eat bread with the butter side up.
Bergen Streetman over at Trinity University Press, and you write the blog Vintage Kids Books My Kid Loves. What about this story? What does it say?
Well, you know, the great thing about Dr. Seuss was he originally started writing books in the 30s. And then when World War II broke out, he got really activized by the political movement and actually quit doing children's books and went to work for the military doing political cartoons and really helped with a lot of the propaganda for the U.S. And upon returning, a lot of his children's books sort of have hidden political themes, like The Lorax is about environmentalism. Yertle the Turtle was really about Hitler. The Horton Hears a Who, a lot of people say, was about Hiroshima, and the Butter Battle was really kind of an arms race, during the Cold War between the U.S. and Russia. So he was really somebody who really, I think, made kids start thinking about really who the bad guy was, and not just who the bad guy in a superhero kind of way, but a bad guy in the real sense of the word, of the little guy can stand up to the man, whoever that is, be it Hitler or be it, you know, a nuclear weapon or whatever, and make a difference and has a voice that that child can use. So I think it's really influenced multiple generations of children really to think larger than just inside of themselves.
Yeah, published in 1984, right during the height of a Cold War, basically talks about mutual destruction and end of all life. And so the last page is blank. And that was kind of controversial in itself. So, Vicki, does that story still have, can kids process that?
Well, I'm sure that they can. I will have to tell you that that's not one of his most popular books. And when we check out books at the library, that's not the one people are always asking for. But I think
kids get hooked on one Dr. Seuss.
Oh, sure. And then they'd like to read every one of them. That's exactly true. But I think one of the things we have to really credit him for is the ability to talk about a really serious topic without seeming overwhelmingly didactic. I'm going to teach you a lesson now. And making that playful and fun. So this ability to do these two things at the same time, he may really be the only, or at least the best, of the author illustrators that we have that can do that.
Those Claudia. Books you just mentioned, in my previous life as a teacher, those were regularly used in our classrooms. I know it was common to find them in teachers' classrooms to help bridge some of those concepts.
Well, you know, the beginner reader books that he did, he brought in, he didn't just publish under that imprint. He brought in a lot of illustrators that were working in advertising, and like Stan and Jan Berenstain he brought in. But the interesting thing about his books that weren't beginning reader, the beginning readers are really like the bestsellers, like Cat in the Hat and One Fish, Two Fish.
Green Eggs and Ham.
It was his other books, really, where he got to really make a point. And I think that's really where he felt his heart was in all of his writing.
Well, Green Eggs and Ham has a moral. You know, try things and you'll like them. Don't be so closed-minded. Our phone lines are open. We want to hear what you have to say. Your memories of Dr. Seuss, your favorite children's literature. The number is 210-614-8980. We'll be back in 1 minute. This is The Source on KSTX. Welcome back to The Source on KSTX. Children's literature, it's a foundation. It helps us appreciate books and establish that books are fun, interesting, exciting, something that we will treasure for the rest of our lives, and someone who helped us along the way, Dr. Seuss. We're talking about a new book that has come out from him. They uh, he, he uh, had a manuscript that they found that he wrote a while back. And now it's a new book, What Pet Should I Get? And it's sold out. We have a couple of copies lying around the table here because we have librarians and know their stuff. Vicki Ash, Children's Book Coordinator for the San Antonio Public Library. Claudia Maceo, the manager at the Twig Bookstore at the Pearl. And Bergen Streetman, the Trinity University Press. And she also writes the blog, Vintage Kids Books My Kid Loves. And we invite you into our conversation. The number is 210-614-8980 to tell us about your favorite books. So other than Dr. Seuss, because he's casting a huge shadow, who are we not talking? Who should we be including here, Vicki?
Well, one of my favorite authors that and illustrators who has a local connection is James Marshall, who unfortunately is also now deceased. But he wrote the George and Martha books about two very charming hippos.
What's the local connection?
He actually was born in San Antonio, and many of his books have a little, his illustrations almost always include some little nod to Texas. So there'll be a snow globe of the Alamo on the teacher's desk, or he had a retelling of Goldilocks and the Three Bears that has a Beacon Hill School pennant above the baby bear's bed, which is the school he went to here. I'm very charmed by his books. And he also had some books published posthumously after he died. And like this one, some of them were more complete than others.
And the name again?
James Marshall. He illustrated Miss Nelson Is Missing, the famous substitute teacher. Viola Swamp.
Viola Swamp is probably sends shudders up every child's spine.
Okay, all right. I'm sorry. I don't know these things.
We're going to bring you one over so you can enjoy it.
All right. I'm going to get a caller on the air because we really want to get our callers involved in this because this is a community thing. The number is 210-614-8980. Mario is on the line. Mario, hi. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi. Thank you for having me. I just wanted to make a comment and ask a question. When I was growing up, Cheryl Silverstein was my absolute favorite as a child. And I just wanted to ask, what do you think is the difference between Dr. Seuss and Cheryl Silverstein? And do you think Dr. Seuss really overshadowed Silverstein with putting out more books and the more colorful illustrations and making it more attractive to children? Thank you.
Mario, great question. Thanks for calling in. So, Bergen.
You know, I don't really see Dr. Seuss as overshadowing other people. I mean, I think he opened a lot of doors that had not been there previously. You know, he sort of came out when he really came out in the 40s and the 50s writing. I mean, it was really stuff that nobody had seen before. And I think there was a lot of illustrators and authors who did things that were a little more radical, a little wilder, like Cheryl Silverstein, who spent time living in the Playboy Mansion. And, you know, he was kind of a wild one, as they say. And I don't know that if without Dr. Seuss, somebody like him could have gotten his ideas published. I mean, because Cheryl Silverstein is really wonderful, but a lot of his stuff is really out there, really wild, really of
like what did he write?
He wrote The Giving Tree, which is not necessarily one of his wild, most famous books.
Where the Sidewalk Ends is probably his most famous
kind of rooted things.
I think one other serious difference between the two of them is Cheryl Silverstein, for the most part, wrote collections of poetry, and they are illustrated and really quite interesting, but they're really not picture storybooks in the same way that Dr. Seuss wrote stories, where you start at the beginning and read all the way through to the end.
Yeah, he did a few, but yeah, mainly he was really a poet.
But I think he's really more of a poet. Else.
All right, let's get another caller, and Tom is here. Hi, Tom. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Oh, thank you. I had a question. I don't know who the author is, but when I was a little kid in the mid-50s, my favorite book of them all was called The Pokey Little Puppy. And I just want to know if anyone's ever heard of it. If it's still,
in print.
Okay, Tom, we got some people. They're going to tell you all about it.
That has a San Antonio connection, doesn't it?
That has a San Antonio connection
as
well.
Okay, so who wants to tell me about that?
I don't know the San Antonio connection.
I believe she was actually from San Antonio.
Mm-hmm. Who?
Isn't her name Jean Seberg?
I think so.
Something like that.
Yeah. So it was a golden book, I think.
It was a golden book.
So what's up with this puppy? Want to hear the story. What's the narrative?
You know, that was like a lot of the golden books were really sort of morality tales. And he was like the pokey little puppy. He was always slower than the rest of his siblings. And he was always getting left behind. And, you know, he always was getting in trouble. And like, so I think like a lot of the golden books, there was sort of a morality or teaching children a lesson.
And there was like a little chant that would repeat.
So I'm being told it's roly-poly. Janet Sebring Lowry?
Yes, that's correct.
Oh, I was
close. The producer on top of things. Okay, all right. So that in the San Antonio connection, that she's from?
I think she's from San Antonio.
She's from San Antonio.
Okay, all right, all right. Let's get another caller because we've got a lot of interesting callers here. They want us to tell us things. Liz, hi, Liz. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I wanted to actually comment. Somebody just told me that there is a Dial-A-Story phone number offered by the San Antonio Public Library, and I just called it yesterday, and they read a very short story, and it held the attention of my 4 and 2-year-old over the Bluetooth of my car, and it was really nice to know that that's something that San Antonio Public Library has, and I wanted to offer or send that number, if that's okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so the number is 207-4466. And the author, one of the librarians will let you know their name, and then they'll tell you the name of the story, and then they read that short story. It's about, I don't know, 5 to 7 minutes long, and then you have to hang up for another person to go ahead and call. But it's a really nice service offered, and I just thought I'd recommend that.
Wow, Liz, that was great. Thanks for calling in with that tip. Appreciate it.
Gee, thanks, Liz.
So tell me about this, Vicki. Is the person telling the story live? They're reading it live, or it's pre-recorded?
We record a new story every Monday. So every week, there's a new story in English and a new story in Spanish. And the children's librarians across the San Antonio Public Library system just take turns doing it. We try to pick a book that, although it'd be great if you could see the pictures, it still makes sense if you don't see the pictures. And we have a lot of fun doing it. We've been doing it for, I've been at San Antonio for 10 years, at the public library for 10 years, and it was in place many years before that.
It's seems like today's technology with iPads and iPhones, we'd scale out of that, but not so.
There's nothing more powerful than the human voice, as you must know as a radio guy.
Yeah, I guess so.
And so I think that certainly a parent or care provider reading directly to a child, I think would be the very best thing. But a skilled story reader, like we hope all the children's librarians are, and I can pretty much vouch for them, is a good choice. And, of course, lots of children enjoy all kinds of audio books, those that are professionally recorded as well as the ones that we do locally.
So, Claudia over at the Twig, what books are out there that we need to know about?
Well, I brought some of my newest favorites. And some that are older, but a couple that are called Blue Bonnet Books, and the Blue Bonnet Awards are given by the Texas Librarian Association recommended reads for the year, and children beginning this school year will be reading a selection of titles and voting on which ones are their favorites. And of those, of that list, I brought Emily's Blue Period by Kathleen Daly, and about a little girl whose parents have gone through a divorce, and she's very involved in her art world and has a blue period. She's inspired by Picasso, and it's a clever, clever story, and it talks about not only is blue period her artistic, but her outlet for dealing with her sadness about her parents splitting up.
So kids they want stories that are very reflective of their own life.
And this kind of book is so multi-layered because it does talk about Picasso. It talks about everyday things that kids deal with, and has a very artistic allusions in it that make it a lot of fun for different kids. You don't have to have parents going through a divorce to enjoy that book, nor do you have to know about Picasso, so it's a great read. The Scraps book is one of my favorites because Lois Ellert has been around for decades, and I've been a collector of her work, and this is considered Notes from a Colorful Life is the subtitle. The book is the Scraps book, and that typifies her style of illustration is collage. So it's really a memoir. It's about her artwork, and it's very colorful, beautiful, interesting book. A couple of the new ones that, this one, Gorillas in Our Midst, you may hear the allusion to Gorillas in the Mist, is hysterical and has a fun ending and reminds me of some of those fun endings, like What Pet Should I Get, having a surprise ending. And then The Night World by Mordecai Gerstein is also is a very beautiful book. It's has to do with a light and the absence of light, having there being no color, but all the life, animal life that is around at night, and then it becomes day at the end, and how it evolves as a story going from dark into light, and the information it shares about night animals is a lot of fun. And then Where Do I End? And as you open the book, and You Begin is a very beautiful story. It's it also should be the illustrations are especially spectacular, but with some beautiful language in it as well.
Bergen, tell us about some of your books. What do you think, what needs to be rediscovered?
Well, you know, that I started blogging in 2007 because I started hitting used bookstores, really because new books were so expensive. Sorry, Claudia.
and, you should be part of our patron program.
The first book I bought was actually Why I Built the Boogle House, which was by Dr. Seuss's first wife, Helen Palmer. And I was just fascinated with this book, and I couldn't believe it was a dollar, and I couldn't believe it was so wonderful. I couldn't believe it was out of print. So I started blogging about a lot of books that were out of print, and people started writing in because everybody has a memory and everyone's looking for that book that they read when they were two and they can't remember the name. So one of my absolute favorites is another San Antonio native, Jack Kent, who most of his books are out of print at this point, but he was fabulous, lived on the San Antonio River for a long time. His son still lives here in San Antonio. He wrote The Fat Cat. He wrote a book called
comic strip.
Dear John. Right. He did King Eru, which was a comic strip for a long time in San Antonio. Another author that I love is James Flora. He's somebody who has been recently rediscovered, but he was an ad man and does wild, crazy things, even wilder than a lot of the Dr. Seuss things. And of course, one of my all-time favorites is William Steig, who did Shrek most famously, but he has a lot of really wonderful books. One that's called Rotten Island, that's just about all these monsters that live on this island and like bite each other and kill each other. It's really like little boys love it.
So no one's talking about Captain Underpants, which is like my kind of a thing. All right, well, thank you all so much for coming up here and telling us about these books. I want to thank Vicki Ash with the library, Claudia Maceo with the Twig, and Bergen Streetman with her blog, Vintage Kids Books My Kid Loves. This is The Source on KSTX.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is produced by Paul Flav and David Martin Davies. Our engineer is Doug DeMore. Management and oversight provided by News Director Shelley Koffler and VP of Programming Wayne Coble. Production assistance is provided by me, Ruben Garcia. Support for The Source comes from the contributors to the Community Engagement Fund, including the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.